Hello and welcome to Mapping the Zone, a podcast devoted to informal discussion of long and dense books with a particular focus on the works and context of Thomas Pynchon. I think I got that whole thing right. But today we're going to be talking about something else. We're going to be talking about the song Cotton Eye Joe by Rednecks. It is the finest country song I've ever heard, the finest dance song I've ever heard, EDM song, and largely viewed as the best line dance song, which, you know, is in the music industry is what we call the trifecta. We're going to be investigating where did Cotton Eye Joe come from and where did Cotton Eye Joe go for the next few hours. Hope you'll join me with that. No, actually, we're going to be talking about Octavia Butler's Patternist series, not Cotton Eye Joe. I've just had Cotton Eye Joe stuck in my head for a while because of TikTok. Anyways,
you had me really excited there.
It would be pretty funny to do like a very serious, in-depth discussion of that song.
Well, you had such a good roll there of the puns tied together. I think you should maybe do it.
Maybe next time. Maybe next time. That's not a bad idea. So Octavia Butler, she's pretty famous now. She's kind of gained in popularity and kind of public visibility. I want to say, I personally kind of connect that to the Black Lives Matter movement and the rise in prominence of inclusivity, especially in the sci-fi sphere, sci-fi fantasy sphere, because she did write some fantasy as well. But that also, which is something I'm going to get into in a little bit, but it also could be connected, Octavia Butler's kind of recent rise in visibility and popularity could be connected to her parable series. I believe it's the Parable of the Talents and the Parable of the Sower. I could have that. I can't remember which one. I always get them mixed up, the two different titles. That series is a duology set in the 2020s, in which a highly charismatic leader who uses the slogan "Make America Great Again" comes into power over America, and he kind of dismantles the workers' rights and gives more power to states, and that paired with a very degraded climate. Leads to a semi-apocalyptic scenario. Butler is lauded and is, I think, still kind of being lauded for predicting a lot of our current issues in society, especially in America. The whole "Make America Great" thing, "Make America Great Again" thing, is, you know, particularly prescient. I do get kind of annoyed personally with people calling sci-fi, especially dystopic sci-fi, prophetic. I've read some John Brunner recently, because I was told by the internet that it was prophetic, and people tend to call, you know, people don't call like utopic sci-fi prophetic barely ever. And usually the dystopic sci-fi is called prophetic is a bit overly negative, in my opinion. Because as fucked as we are as a society, I don't think we're not in dystopic, post-apocalyptic territory quite yet. And to kind of preempt any questions about where to start with Octavia Butler, I personally started with the Parable series. Like I said, it's a duology that I according to some interviews I've read with Butler, she was hoping to continue eventually, with at least, I think she had vague plans for at least three or four more books, and I do believe she attempted to write one of them. Late in her life, she definitely suffered from really bad writer's block, I guess, which hindered her writing, and, you know, she didn't publish a lot later in her life. She ended up dying, I want to say, in 2006, and definitely in the 2000s. Some type of heart-related issue. I believe she was in her 50s. I'm just going to go over her life a little bit, give you kind of a little outline of her life. She was born in Pasadena, California in 1947. Like a lot of writers and readers, she was extremely shy as a child. She's very introverted. I think her dad passed away when she was quite young, and she, I think, had pretty strong memories of following her mom to pretty menial jobs. I think in Octavia Butler's world and Octavia Butler's family, her dream to be a writer was kind of viewed as a pipe dream, a dream that would never be accomplished, something that was fanciful and not attainable. And this is something that she talks about in interviews a lot, is how she grew up in poverty, how she always wanted to be a writer, and how difficult that was for her because of her circumstances in life. I believe her mom did help her out some with her writing career in terms of monetary funds and stuff like that. But anyway, so Octavia Butler, she did attend the Clarion Sci-Fi Writers Workshop. I believe that Harlan Ellison was one of her teachers. She did sell a story that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in a different context to the Last Dangerous Visions anthology. So actually, I thought about doing this episode over the Dangerous Visions and again Dangerous Visions anthologies, partially because, as I think I mentioned during our one of our series already, I think, I can't remember which one. Harlan Ellison claims that he almost secured a short story by Pynchon for those anthologies, for one of those anthologies. But yeah, so she sold, that was one of her first sales. She sold a few stories in the early 70s and then didn't have barely any success until the release of Pattern Master in 1976. Now I'm gonna get into the Patterner series, which is what I'm talking about today, in general. The Pattern Master was the fir her first book, her debut novel. It was released in 1976, as I said. It was her first novel, and it is actually chronologically the last novel in the Patterner series. So she released the her first novel was the end of the series. So she wrote the end of the series, and then kind of, I think I've seen it in at least one interview where she talks about how she was. She did all this world building for Pattern Master, and she wanted to explore how the world got to where it did in Pattern Master. And so I'm going to go over the series actually chronologically, and we'll get back to Pattern Master. I'm going to give you a little summary. But anyway, so the series starts with Wild Seed. That's the fourth. It was the fourth novel published, but it's the first chronologically. Wild Seed starts off with Anyanwu and Yanwu, I believe living in the 17th century Nigeria. Although there is a short section in the book that's set in Egypt in the like almost prehistoric times, around when the Egyptians were conquered by the Nubians, or the Nubians conquered the Egyptians, one or the other. And Wild Seed is about Doro, who's the Nubian. Who's a man who's born in the Egypt area thousands of years ago. He survived all of that time by transferring his consciousness from one body to another, and he feeds on his victim's mental energy in the process. And then it centers on his finding and kind of taming of Anyanwu, who is a shape-shifting healer who has perfect control over her body. Anyanwu is technically pretty much the main character, and that first novel, Wild Seed, is basically about their love-hate relationship that they have. And I use the phrase love-hate relationship a lot, probably too much. And a lot of times, what people mean by love-hate relationship is like slash dislike. But the relationship between Anyanwu and Doro is definitely stronger than like dislike. Like Anyanwu has very deep fears of Doro. She goes through periods of intense hatred towards Doro. But they struggle. It's about their struggle to kind of live together and apart over the course of a few generations. Doro is attempting to create a like psychic subsection of humanity. Like he discovers people with special abilities and he makes them breed with one another. So the series does involve eugenics in a way that could have been inspired by Dune. She never states that in any interviews. I don't believe she ever states. I mean, I haven't exhaustively read every Octavia Butler interview or nonfiction piece. But I haven't come across any time where she would mention Dune as being a possible inspiration for the eugenics in the Patterner series. But it definitely seems possible, especially given how influential Dune is to the sci-fi world. Wild Seed does seem to kind of build up to an eventual showdown, an eventual fight between Anyanwu and Yanwu and Doro. And there is a showdown at the end. I'll leave it kind of open to as to what happens. Next chronologically is Mind of My Mind. That was the second one published in the series, and it's also the second one in the series, but it was published in 1977. So that one's set mostly in California in the fictional Forsyth, which appears in Mind of My Mind and Pattern Master Forsyth, California. For some reason, whenever I was reading it, I initially thought it was real. Like I got on Google Maps and was like, you know, where is this? And then I realized it was fictional. I don't know why I thought it was real. Just it's Forsyth. It's a very believable. I mean, California is so big. It was a believable thing for me. Anyway, so Doro, you know, his whole thousands of years of breeding has seemed to succeeded. His patternists, the people that he controls, that he breeds, are centered in California. Although he still has communities all over America. One thing I forgot to mention in Wild Seed is that Doro brings a lot of his followers to America so they can hide there in the wilderness and he can kind of control them a little bit easier. That Mind of My Mind, it mostly features the main character of that is Mary, who by the end of the book becomes the leader of the newfound patternists, because by the middle of the book, she becomes connected to all these other telepaths and she kind of can draw power from their psychic powers and they're all linked together. And it's kind of hard to explain, and I don't believe it's like necessarily fully explored. The whole like what their connections are and what the whole pattern, which is what they call capital P, which is what they call their powers and their connection. That book features an eventual showdown between Mary, who controls the pattern, and by the end of the book has like 2,000, around 2,000, maybe 1,000 other telepaths kind of under her control that she can draw from their strength, and that does feature a showdown between her and Doro for control over the telepathic community. And Yanwu is still alive in Mind of My Mind, but she's kind of a more minor character who now goes by Emma and has become a writer and seems to be somewhat of a stand-in for Octavia Butler herself. Those two books, Wild Seed and Mind of My Mind, are the only two books you really have to read one before the other. Mind of My Mind does have a short summary of the events of Wild Seed in it. And a lot of the narrative tension of Wild Seed will be taken away if you read Mind of My Mind first, even though Mind of My Mind was published first. The next book in this series is Clay's Ark. That was by far my least favorite. I believe I rated it 2 stars out of 5 on Goodreads, which I think I've rated one other book on Goodreads 2 stars. It was the Isaac Asimov detective story that I didn't like. A lot of people don't like Clay's Ark because of how violent it is. People find the violence to be over the top and gratuitous. That's not what I didn't like. What I didn't like is there's a little bit of homophobia in the book. It's implied at one point that you cannot rape a homosexual man. That's about half a sentence, and in the book, it's not a prolonged exploration of consent in that way. But the book explores stuff like Stockholm Syndrome, It's about how, like, in the intervening years between Mind of My Mind and Clay's Ark, humanity on Earth has sent a manned expedition ship to another planet and another solar system. On that planet, the astronauts were infected by some type of bacteria, which takes over their bodies and alters their consciousness and forces them to go home and continually want and need to spread the disease, spread the bacteria. Only one of the astronauts survives until returning to Earth, and he creates a small community of people, just like Doro did in Wild Seed and like Forsyth in Mind of My Mind. There's a small community that's slowly being added to because he's trying to control the urge to spread the bacteria to all of humanity. The bacteria causes the regular humans who have the disease to create like sphinx-like children who are capable of speech and everything, but are kind of cat-like and a lot faster than regular people and just look different. And it involves the group kidnaps a father and his two daughters. And the book mainly follows the father and the two daughters and two daughters and then the one astronaut. I just didn't find that book very believable. Like I said, it deals with Stockholm Syndrome. But a lot of the Stockholm Syndrome like happens within like an hour of them meeting their captors. You know, it's not, I just didn't find it kind of rushed. The little bit of homophobia bothered me a fair amount. I actually kind of like the violence. I thought the violence was pretty well done and pretty kind of gnarly. But it's my least favorite of the series. Next in the series is a posthumously released short story called A Necessary Being, which is a prequel to Survivor, the fourth book in the series. The short story, it's not necessarily, you don't really necessarily need to read that short story. It's just, it involves the alien race from Survivor. And is, yeah, like I said, a prequel to the events of Survivor. And it's also summarized in Survivor, so you don't really need to read it. Although I did find it pretty good and fun to read. Survivor is an interesting one. It's now out of print. Butler herself kind of condemned the novel and said that she didn't want it to be reprinted. Copies of it go for, I've seen copies in Half Price Books for like 250, like one I saw was 250, the other one was 500 on eBay. It's a minimum of 250, but it goes up to like 500, 600, 700, 800. Copies are very expensive. I did manage to snag one kind of cheaply, basically because I'm a completionist and I wanted to complete the whole series. And I may actually end up selling it just because it's so expensive. I don't want to necessarily keep it, but we'll see. Anyways, Survivor is about a group of colonizers who escape from Earth. Earth is now basically controlled by the Patternists and the telepathic people that were created by Doro. And the Clayarchs, which is the name for the humans with the bacteria disease and their offspring. Clayarchs is all one word. So the Earth is basically, then there are a few regular humans left, but they're all being sent out into the stars to escape the conflict between the Patternists and the Clayarchs. The group that we follow is a group of missionaries, or like very devout Christians who arrive on a different planet populated by the Cone, who are like a kind of, color shifting Bigfoot species. If you ever wanted to read a romance between a color-shifting Bigfoot and a human girl, this is your book. There is a romance between a Cone leader and the main character. We do get some sex with Bigfoot, stuff like that, in the book, which is always fun, I guess. Actually, I like Survivor a fair amount. I didn't think it was perfect, and I do kind of understand why Butler disowned it. She called it her Star Trek novel in that, humans arrive on a different planet and immediately begin interbreeding with the, people there. And she just kind of viewed it as basically like Star Trek fan fiction. I believe it's a lot better than that personally. But I do kind of see why she didn't want it reprinted. But yeah, that whole thing is there's two different factions in the aliens, and they kind of fight each other, and the humans are kind of caught in the middle, and they have to kind of find their own way. It's a lot about like power dynamics between the aliens and the humans, and power dynamics inside the humans and all the different factions and stuff. It's pretty interesting novel. That one came out in 1978. I think that would be the third book that was released, but it's the fourth book chronologically. So as I've already talked about a little bit, Pattern Master, it was the first book published, but it's the last one in the series. It's about the Patternists who now are basically rule the world, or at least rule North America. And they do keep regular humans as basically slaves, and they're in a seemingly endless war with the Clayarchs. The Clayarchs' aim is to, you know, infect them with the disease, and the Patternists just kind of want to survive and kill all the Clayarchs. It's technically a coming of age story for a young Patternist, a young telepath, who finds out he's the son of the Pattern Master, who's the ruler of all the Patternists. And the Pattern Master, like, you know, I think he's like Mary in Mind of My Mind. He can draw power from the other telepaths in his pattern. There's psychic warfare. People fight each other psychically in this book. Ture kind of has to fight for his position and possibly eventually arise to the role of Pattern Master. It's between him and his brother that he didn't grow up with. His brother, basically finagles a way to enslave the main character, Ture, and then him and his brother fight it out to be the Pattern Master. And yeah, so that's basically the whole series. Hopefully I didn't spoil too much. It's not a very easily spoilable series. As you know, I mean, the first book in the series was the last book chronologically. What's important about the series to me and to a lot of people is that I believe that An Yanwu from Wild Seed and Mind of My Mind was the first kind of strong female African-American female character in sci-fi. I mean, Octavia Butler is well known partially for being for much of her career, she was basically the only she talks about this in interviews, that she was the only African-American woman publishing in sci-fi for much of her career. She does talk about how for her first three books, Pattern Master, Survivor, and Mind of My Mind, her publisher didn't know that she was Black. They just knew that she was a woman from her name, because she sent in the novels like randomly, or you know, like she just submitted the novels over the transom. So they just kind of chose it out of a stack of manuscripts that had been submitted. An Yanwu from, like I said, Wild Seed, Mind of My Mind, is in many ways kind of the first of her kind in science fiction. Generally speaking, I don't think there were really any main characters that were African in science fiction. I mean, there are other, at least not written by a woman. Samuel Delaney is another African American sci-fi writer. He's the one that wrote the introduction to a book of interviews that I have with Octavia Butler, and he does kind of talk about their relationship and how they have some similarities and some differences and stuff. So Butler is she thinks of herself as a feminist, definitely. So that is an aspect of her work, is feminism. And I'm going to read the intro to the first section of Wild Seed, and then I'll pretty much be done, I think. I don't really have much else. It's going to be kind of a longer quote. I believe that this quote was used by Orson Scott Card as an example of how to start a book of sci-fi and how to, like an example of how to, of good sci-fi prose and how to transmit information in a successful way through sci-fi. So yeah, chapter one. Doro discovered the woman by accident when he went to see what was left of one of his seed villages. The village was a comfortable, mud-walled place surrounded by grasslands and scattered trees. But Doro realized even before he reached it that its people were gone. Slavers had been to it before him. With their guns and their greed, they had undone in a few hours the work of 1,000 years. Those villagers they had not herded away, they had slaughtered. Doro found human bones, hair, bits of desiccated flesh missed by scavengers. He stood over a very small skeleton, the bones of a child, and wondered where the survivors had been taken. Which country or New World colony? How far would he have to travel to find the remnants of what had been a healthy, vigorous people? Finally, he stumbled away from the ruins, bitterly angry, not knowing or caring where he went. It was a matter of pride with him that he protected his own. Not the individuals, perhaps, but the groups. They gave him their loyalty, their obedience, and he protected them. He had failed. He wandered southwest toward the forest, leaving as he had arrived, alone, unarmed, without supplies, accepting the savannah and later the forest as easily as he accepted any terrain. He was killed several times, by disease, by animals, by hostile people. This was a harsh land. Yet he continued to move southwest, unthinkingly veering away from the section of the coast where his ship awaited him. After a while, he realized it was no longer his anger at the loss of his seed village that drove him. It was something new, an impulse, a feeling, a kind of mental undertow pulling at him. He could have resisted it easily, but he did not. He felt there was something for him farther on, a little farther, just ahead. He trusted such feelings. He'd not been this far west for several hundred years. Thus, he could be certain that whatever, whoever he found would be new to him, new and potentially valuable. He moved on eagerly. The feeling became sharper and finer, resolving itself into a kind of signal he would normally have expected to receive only from people he knew. People like his lost villagers, whom he could be tracking now before they were, whom he should be tracking now before they were forced to mix their seed with foreigners and breed away all the special qualities he valued in them. But he continued on southwest, closing slowly on his quarry. And then we switch perspectives to Anyanwu, and we get the meeting between Anyanwu and Doro. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk about Octavia Butler is she does have some similarities with Pynchon. As you can tell from that quote, their prose styles are very different. You know, Pynchon's prose is very ornate, very convoluted. Consciously so. And I feel like Octavia Butler, I would use words like sparse, direct. She doesn't mess around. The sentences aren't long. Like I said, she's pretty direct. But both authors do kind of have this weird obsession with like countercultures or like cult, like communities within the larger society. And like Mason and Dixon is about, like, it centers a lot of it on Mason and Dixon, obviously, with their expedition, which is a kind of community inside the wider society that it, of the 1700s America and Britain. Gravity's Rainbow has the White Visitation, the Herero clan in Europe, the Anubis, you know, all of these are kind of smaller communities within the wider society. I could go on for other books by Pynchon. But they do have kind of this obsession with that kind of stuff, with like the oddness and the special quirks of smaller communities that set themselves apart consciously. They also have Octavia Butler is heavily obsessed with power dynamics, questions of consent, questions of, like I said, power and who has power over other people and why. That is also something that Pynchon likes to explore in his novels and his fiction. They go about it in pretty different ways. I just highly recommend Butler in particular. I would recommend starting with the Parable series. That's where I started. Do you have any questions, Will?
Well, just one point of clarification, I guess. You'd mentioned that the only strict advice you'd give when it comes to reading order in the Patternist series is that people should read Wild Seed before Mind of My Mind. Does it matter outside of that? Say somebody happened to run across a copy of, I don't know, Clay's Ark. That's what it's called. Clay's Ark first. Would you recommend waiting until you'd read Wild Seed?
Honestly, this may be a little bit controversial for, at least in online circles of, you know, some Reddit threads I've read. I other than, like I said, like you said, like I said, other than Wild Seed, you need to read Wild Seed before Mind of My Mind. Pretty much all the rest of them could be read as standalones. In my opinion, you know, like Clay's Ark, it's the middle one in the series. That being said, you know, there's no characters. But I think the titular Clay is a minor character in Mind of My Mind, which does not play into the plot at all. And they all kind of do a good job of doing kind of short summaries where you don't have to ever read the other ones. But yeah, other than Wild Seed in My Mind being a pretty firm duology, I would say that you could probably read Clay's Ark on its own or kind of jump around in the series. Because none of the rest of, like, you know, Survivor is kind of, which, you know, people, casual sci-fi fans or casual fans of Octavia Butler are not going to have access to copies of Survivor, but Survivor is kind of on its own. It's kind of like a standalone set in the same world, where, you know, you don't really have to have read Wild Seed, Mind of My Mind, or Clay's Ark to understand Survivor. And obviously Pattern Master is the first published, so you don't necessarily have to have read the other ones to fully understand Pattern Master. Because other than, like I said, Wild Seed, Mind of My Mind, none of the characters persist throughout the series. The world building, a lot of the world building is pretty much summarized. It will kind of spoil like some of the world building in some of the earlier books chronologically. We start later. But that being said, no, I feel like you can kind of jump around and or start basically with Clay's Ark or Pattern Master or Survivor and then go back and stuff. That's one of the things I like about the series is that it's such a loose, it's a very loose collection of novels.
Yeah, they all seem really interesting as a whole. But one thing I kind of noticed, in at least the way you talked about it, is that it seems like whether it's Butler's opinion in the case of Survivor, or as you've said, the kind of more popular opinion with like Clay's Ark, it seems interesting to me how it seems like the higher concept stories are the ones which don't have the same level of respect or love.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I mean, Wild Seed and Mind of My Mind, I think, are kind of viewed as the best books in the series. I want to say, I mean, and I would agree with that assessment. But they all have definitely, like, you know, it's not just, they can be enjoyed on a surface level, on a plot level. But it's kind of, you know, like they all have kind of semi-consistent themes that are explored, but that's kind of what keeps me coming back to Butler, is the stuff kind of in between the words on the page, the concepts that she explores, and stuff. You know, like, I did find myself, some of the books are, you know, Clay's Ark is kind of a page turner. Pretty much all of them have pretty propulsive plots. plots that you're going to want to get through as quickly as possible just to figure out what happens next. But I think that a large reason for her success is like I said, the concepts and themes that she explores.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking about how, you know, both what you've said and just, you know, I have the Wikipedia page open just so I don't forget the book titles. It's interesting to think about how this may or may not have been inspired by Dune, because, you know, so much of Dune is inspired by actual, like, African people, just not Americans, African Americans. Anyway, it's just...
Yeah, No, go on.
No, I was just going to trail off meanderingly.
One thing that I do find funny about the breeding program in the series is that it's apparently Octavia Butler, when she was a child, wanted to, I haven't seen her link to her obsession with horses as a child with her obsession with breeding as a child, like breeding as in like selective breeding and eugenics and stuff. But I do know from interviews that she was very into horses, and that a lot of her early stories when she was like preteen were about horses and stuff like that. She admits that the breeding program from the books is a fulfillment of her childhood dream to basically have her own eugenics program. Which is a hell of a thing to admit, in my opinion, and kind of funny. And I don't know. Yeah, I would assume it came from the Dune series, which I would assume that she has read at least some of it. The only other possible source I can think of is the fact that she was born right after World War II, and you know, came of age in the '60s, whenever people were a little bit more. Like the history of Nazi Germany was being explored a lot more in kind of mainstream culture, but I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the history of Black Americans is full of people trying to treat them like a breeding population. So I would assume that came from Dune, but the parallels are there for sure.
Yeah, and she definitely, like, I guess I didn't mention this at all, but her most famous novel, her most read novel, the only novel that she wrote that I know anyone that's actually read, or know, like, anyone that I've known. I've met people in passing. I met someone at a conference who presented a paper about Octavia Butler, and that's kind of where I got started on pursuing reading her. But I had a friend in grad school who had only read Kindred, and Kindred is about a Black woman from the 20th century being transported back in time to slavery, slavery times. And I do know that Octavia Butler did a lot of research for that. And she does talk about in interviews how she kind of had to whitewash the slavery experience for the novel, because otherwise no one would want to read it. And that does come into play a little bit with the novel Wild Seed, which was her next novel after Kindred. Because Wild Seed, Doro is himself a slaver. He deals with slavers. He has a slave ship. The middle passage is portrayed, although it's pretty like, you know, like Doro is himself African, and he's occupying the body of an African, and his so-called slaves are free to roam the ship and are fed pretty well and not treated in the kind of the classic middle passage way. But that being said, he does enslave people, you know, and Yanwu in that novel is in some ways a slave to him, in that, you know, he forces her to marry his son. He forces her to have kids with his son. He forces her to have kids with other men, all according to like what he wants in his breeding program. So slavery is definitely a big thing for Octavia Butler, and does come into play in this series a good amount. But yeah, Kindred is by far her most famous novel, I would say, and it's the one that's taught in schools, I think, the most commonly.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, putting all of that in context with regards to, you know, when she was writing all of this is, yeah, that's a lot of food for thought. because just from the opening passage of Wild Seed that you read, I mean, there's just so much work done to set the stage for letting the reader into the mind of someone that apparently they're not going to have any reason to tolerate.
Except sorry to cut you off, but that's what's kind of interesting about this series is that, like, especially the first two books, is that you are kind of rooting for Doro, even though he's technically he's a weird mixture of villain and protagonist. Because I personally had this weird feeling where I wanted his breeding program to succeed. And I suspected it would because of, you know, there's so many books in the series. While also being kind of constantly disgusted by him, and he does some like truly horrifying things over the course of the first two books. But that being said, he does succeed in creating a race of psychic people that, you know, and are at least no worse than regular people. I don't know. She plays with your emotions in a really, Octavia Butler plays with your emotions in a very, like, it seems simple, like, while you're reading it, but then if you take a step back and kind of look at it from a higher level, it's very, like, kind of complex, and your allegiances are constantly shifting.
The way that, you know, I have not read any of her works, but I've been aware of who she was, and every time I've seen a quote from her about her work or about writing in general or about other authors, you really get the sense of a lot of self-awareness that maybe is just not displayed by other authors, but I could see how a certain kind of conscientiousness would lead to that kind of very complicated moral situation for a reader.
Yeah, she definitely seemed aware of the fact, like, she was probably painfully aware of the fact of kind of her singular status in sci-fi. You know, the fact that she was probably, you know, of the, she did, you know, she met Harlan Ellison, she met Samuel Delaney a few times. She was part of the convention culture and stuff, and I think that she was probably aware of the fact that she was the only Black woman that a lot of these people were, like, treating with any kind of respect, if that, like, a lot of them maybe had, you know, like, maybe had, like, you know, Black maids working for them or something, but, like, I, you know, like, they had to treat her as an equal, and I think that she kind of realized that they weren't necessarily treating all Black people as an equal. And I think she seemed kind of painfully aware of the fact that she was a bit of an ambassador for her race, for her gender, and, you know, kind of behaved and wrote accordingly. Because while there, you know, like, there is a kind of, whenever you read the Patternist series, it does come across as a little bit kind of played by ear in terms of the fact, you know, she publishes the first book or the last book chronologically first. You know, there's summaries of the other books in the inside the books and stuff like that. But in terms of, like, the way that she portrays race and the way that she portrays consent and stuff like that, and the way that she explores it, it's generally, other than that one, my small quibble with homophobia and Clay's arc, it's almost uniformly portrayed with, like, an astounding amount of delicacy. Well, all right. I guess that probably does it for Luke's bonus episode, for my bonus episode. So thank you all for listening. And this one's going to be a little bit longer than some of my my compatriots' episodes. So thanks for listening to everything. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm always down to respond to emails or Instagram DMs or Twitter DMs about Octavia Butler. And we as a group are always down to respond to those kind of messages in general. So if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Thanks for listening today. See ya.